Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is July 8th, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in eight cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Byron Perry.
I'm Bim Shanmugam.
And I'm Samali.
So we got a very abbreviated episode for you guys this week. Thursday is the cooling off day, which is a standard procedure in Singapore elections whereby coverage and talking about it, and mainly campaigning in the election, is supposed to cease. And a lot of the same rules apply to Friday as well. So we're just going to get up an episode today, Wednesday, July 8th, on the news so far this week, a bit early. Obviously, normally we come out every Friday. So we're just going to do an abbreviated episode for you guys and then share one of our Coco Chats that we had with a very inspiring woman, which I will tell you about soon. What are you guys going to do on Friday? You voting or going to the beach or going to the zoo?
I'm going to get brunch, then vote, okay? Mine's at 4 p.m., okay, government, in case you're listening. I'm going to go,
I think mine's the same time. Brunch. I think it's at 4 p.m., yeah.
So is that like, do you show up at 4 and vote really quickly, or is like that when you're supposed to start waiting, or what's the procedure?
Yeah, I think you roll up and there's a whole bunch of people that have the same time as you, and I think you can check an app or link. See like how many people are like in line and stuff. So yeah,
very smart and very cool that you get the day off, unlike my hellscape of a country, America, where they can't even do that basic thing, and it's on purpose because they like to suppress voters. But anyway, Summer, where are you getting brunch? Where are you getting the eggs Benny?
I'm just waffles. I'm just not going to reveal it because, like, I don't want people to go there. So, like, I assume people listen to this podcast. So, like,
you're an influencer. You don't
That's what I'm saying.
Paid. Okay. I got you.
No free promo.
Well, cool. We'll just dive into our quick top stories of the week.
Awesome. Okay. So, our first story is about Bali. And there's some good news, or I don't know how you want to temper it, but Bali is set to welcome foreign tourists in September. They're reopening their doors. So after months of uncertainty, travel, social, and movement restrictions because of COVID-19, now the provincial government is saying that they will be opening up their doors and they'll start from, well, kind of an odd date, but September 11th.
Oof. Wow. Well, I wonder if anyone will be able to go. I did just see there was the first flight from China into Thailand, I think Bangkok. So some, and I think that was like a tourism flight. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Let's see. I have a feeling, I don't know. Do you think we'll be able to leave Singapore by September?
Hard to say.
Nobody.
I hope
knows.
So. Yeah. We hope so. Yeah.
Certainly hope so. Well, Bali lovers, you can begin not really planning your Bali vacation, but there's a first step that's happened that if your country opens up, and Bali seems to be opening up, that you could be making your way to Bali soon.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope, like, you know, I think they still will have like health protocols in place.
Yeah.
Even when they open the doors. But yeah, I think, you know, slowly, very slowly, we're seeing some light maybe at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think things are continuing to look okay in Singapore and in Thailand. So yeah, fingers crossed. Pray for the Bali tourists that they can go to Bali and get weird. Yeah. And we can return to our regular output of tourists behaving badly in Bali.
Exciting.
That would be the mainly Bogans. Right, Summer?
Kawabunga.
Yeah, so our top story in this abbreviated week in Thailand is about monkeys. Basically, anybody who's been, especially I would say in the south of Thailand, which I have been to, has probably seen, if you've been there for an extended period of time, monkeys on the back of a truck that's full of coconuts. and or maybe you've seen them scurrying up a palm tree to go harvest those coconuts. Recently, there was a big scandal when PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, put out an investigation and press release and corresponding video that showed alleged abuse of macaque monkeys in Thailand. Now, already, and this was a story that we did in Coconuts Bangkok, the commerce minister of Thailand has defended the Thai coconuts industry and said that there is no widespread abuse of these monkeys. Basically, already certain stores in the US and Europe had said they were going to boycott certain Thai coconut products like coconut milk, etc. But again, they emphasize that it's only a small share of products, they say 10%, that are actually harvested by monkeys and only on trees that are over 25 meters tall. So Thai Commerce Minister Jurin Laksanawisit spoke out and said using macaques to pick coconuts is a way of life in the south and only a small number are used to attract tourists. Coconut picking by monkeys on an industrial scale does not exist in Thailand, Jurin said. Most of the ones you see are for lifestyle, culture, and tourism. So yeah, a lot of monkey business going around there, apparently. Have you guys ever seen that?
Not really, no.
Till yeah, when you sent me the link, I did.
Right. The first few times I've seen it, and every time I see it, it just kind of blows my mind. You'll see a truck, and there will be oftentimes, I mean, at least one, but sometimes like four monkeys chained up, holding on to the side of the railing, and you know they seem to be having fun. Usually the trucks are driving like a bat out of hell, but of course I've always wondered. They seemed happy when I've seen them. I mean, they were chained, but they didn't seem to be not enjoying themselves. And I've always wondered, yeah, like how kosher is this? Is there abuse? I think it's something that we may want to look into more because I know they've been doing it for many, many years in Thailand. And of course, monkeys are not opposed to going up and grabbing coconuts. They're very good at it. So yeah, I think it's something that I'm not really sure. I don't have an opinion on yet. I don't know enough, but I'm sure there is some abuse and some monkeys that are happy. And we got to find out more.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about that story that we did with that monkey who was spraying sanitizer into the air.
That was a chimp, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean that was an ape technically, but that was that was a full on like a non-native zoo chimp that is from Africa. So already kind of some not so nice aspects to that. Whereas these are native. I mean they're wild, but then they I think are caught and kind of made domestic, or maybe they are breeded domestic. I really don't know. There's so much I want to know, but it's crazy when you see them run up the tree and grab a bunch of coconuts. They just seem to enjoy that. Yeah, the verdict is out on monkey coconut harvesting. We got to find out more. This is a topic we're very interested in.
Mm-hmm. With a name like ours, you know, we have to.
Yes, it's very
our civic duty. And over in Singapore, there's potentially more monkey business as it's election season. So each year there are elections. It doesn't come without shenanigans. But yeah, so the PAP calls on the Workers' Party to state its stand on Sengkang GRC candidate Risa Khan. Over the statements that she's made in her personal Facebook in 2018, which were just recently dug up. So for those who don't know, the PAP is the governing party in Singapore. They are the People's Action Party. And the Workers' Party is just one of the parties contesting this season. And yeah, so this particular candidate, Raisa Khan, she is from the Workers' Party in the Sengkang GRC. So the online posts in question were published on her social media platforms in 2018 and earlier this year. And in one of her posts, written in the context of the social distancing violators along Robertson Quay, Khan alleged unequal treatment by the police between the rich Chinese and white people and others. And in the 2018 post, she alleged that there was unequal treatment by the authorities between minorities and mosque leaders and corrupt church leaders. This is, of course, in the context of the high-profile City Harvest Church trial where the church leaders were sentenced for misappropriating nearly 50 million Singapore dollars in church funds. So their leader, Kong Hee, was also freed from prison after serving a portion of his 3.5-year sentence.
There was this backlash against her, and then she apologized, but she didn't withdraw, right?
Yeah, and then the leader of the Workers' Party, Pritam Singh, he also stood behind her in a public apology with the press. And yeah, he said he did not regret fielding her. And yeah, so Raisa Khan did make a public apology, and thousands stood up for her online, spawning the hashtag I Stand With Raisa on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else.
Very interesting. And then...
Okay, and it seems that, you know, police reports are the flavor of the month in Singapore, because there's this other dude who reported Xia She, who is like possibly Singapore's most prominent influencer / blogger, to the police over her 2010 Little India tweet.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so Xia She is, her real name is Wendy Cheng. She was reported over her now deleted tweet that purportedly targeted migrant workers. Okay, so this guy, Vignesh Sankar, who's like 21 years old, he was the one who reported Xia She to the police yesterday after he found that Xia She had posted to Twitter a comment that he deemed was trying to stir up anti-Indian sentiments. So the tweet is no longer available on Xia She's account, but it was captured in a video that Sankar had put up on his Instagram. And the tweet in question had read, "'Cause they molest people and fuck our maids and leer at girls and flood Little India. Yeah, I'm stereotyping, but fuck you if you say it's not true." So yeah, her tweet does say they, and it doesn't specifically say who, but you know, you can draw two and two, but yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of police reports involving this law of racial enmity, right, flying around.
yeah,
that seems to be what everybody's talking about this week in Singapore. Do you think that's true, guys?
Yeah, man. Like, I don't know. Even in, you know, America, they have like the birth of the Karen. It feels like it's kind of, you know, made its way here with the police reports.
Birth of the Wendy.
Oh, God. That should be a thing.
Yeah. That's such an auntie name, by the way.
She's going to pop my you or insult your mother or something. She's going to do it, dude.
I've always found her like extremely entertaining, because she's so awful. She's just an awful representation of influencers, you know? Like, when you think about like the worst of influencers, like that's her.
Like Exhibit A is right here. It's so nice that we have it in our country. We have great access to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that that's kind of her deal. Like, she purposefully is almost trolling and just being as annoying as possible. Have you guys ever heard that, or is it real?
A little bit. Like, I've heard, like, that's her persona, right?
Like, I saw she supported Trump, and that
is like... She wore a MAGA hat, and
Yeah, because, like, controversy breeds clicks in you, you know? Like,
obvi.
Yeah, like everyone has missed the point at this point right now, because like, why do we even care about what this person has to say? Like, there are bigger things to think about, you know, in Singapore right now. And you have sort of the press, like, kind of, and people, and don't get me wrong, it's just not the press. Like, Singaporeans love like controversy and things to complain about and, you know, all this crazy stuff. So like, you know, it's in a way, it's perfect if you're, you know, running the country and you want to sort of divert attention to something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyways, it's Wednesday now. Thursday is the cooling off period. And then Friday is the GE 2020 general election. So again, this is a short episode coming to you on Wednesday rather than Friday. And for our feature interview this week, we have a discussion that our Coconut Singapore managing editor, Nurul Azlia, had with Liana Damira, who is an author and entrepreneur and also a candidate in the general election. Liana has an incredible story going from being a homeless mother living, I believe, in Sembawang Park in a tent to becoming an entrepreneur, author, and politician. So give it a listen, guys, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye. Hi, Liana. How are you?
Hi. Hi, everyone.
We are hanging out with Red Dot United's Liana Damira, who is also a candidate for Jurong JRC. This is her election debut, but she's not just a newcomer. She is a published author for her book called Homeless, and she is the founder of Virtual Assistant Singapore, which is an administrative services startup, right?
Yeah, awesome. That's right. Okay. Thank you so much, Nurul. That is a very concise introduction.
Yeah. So why don't we just start and find out more from you. What has it been like these few days? Must be really, really crazy. I see so many photos of you going all over Jurong.
I know, right, Nurul? But first and foremost, before we start, I would like to thank you for inviting me over for this interview. Ever since nomination day, which was on the 30th of June, right, we've been scouting the ground, being on the, being on a lot of walkabout, talking to the residents of Jurong, because that's a constituency that we are contesting in. We hear a lot of ground sentiments coming to us, sharing with us their issues, their plight. There are those gut-wrenching moments. There are those emotional moments. So there's a lot. There is so much to... Honestly, I am in a position where I'm just soaking in every single thing. And I'm glad to be there for the other people.
Yeah, it must be really crazy. Because also in Singapore, we have such a speedy election. Because polling day is exactly a week from now. So can you really tell us, what is it like trying to gain as much support as possible in such a short period of time?
It's challenging, right? It's really, really challenging. That's one for sure. Secondly, I would say that we don't control the votes. We are here to represent the voice on the ground. We are here to be, your voice itself, especially the Jurong voters' voice. And that is why we exist, because we do not want, at the end of the day, we do not want any walkover. And it's great to know that right now, after nomination day, that no constituency in Singapore are having any walkover, which is great, right? That's great news. That means there's more opportunities to have diverse voices in parliament. That's one. Also, is it 9 days? Okay, 10 days in total, but 9 days in itself is impossible to meet every single one, or every single voter, of course. So we did depend on a lot of online platforms, and some more is due to the fact that we are still going through a pandemic, which is even a double challenge, apart from facing against a Goliath, for instance, and being with an MP which is one of the favorites here with Singaporeans, right?
Yeah.
So, but we know and we embrace that it's tough. However, we do not run from this fight, and we are here to be the voice of the ground.
I think a lot of Singaporeans know that you yourself has gone through so many highs and lows. You are a published author. You wrote the book Homeless, which is about your experience being homeless in Singapore. And then after that, you go on to find your own startup business. Can you tell us a bit more about your past experience and how that has led to, you eventually entering politics?
it's pretty colorful, right? In a way, and it's pretty interesting. I myself do not foresee. We had this conversation, Ravi, Philemon, and myself. We had this conversation one night when we finished one of our walkabout, and all of us were heading home. He was saying to me, Liana, what are the odds that we met in 2009? That was back then. I'll fill you up in the story. That we met in 2009, we can even foresee that we will be in politics. So that was one of the conversations that we had just a few nights ago. And the reason why is that I got to know, I met Ravi back in 2009. And during that particular time, I was homeless and I was living in a tent at Sembawang Beach. So it started with family squabbles, me getting kicked out of my in-laws place, and having no roof overhead. During the lows is where you will get to know who are your actual friends and family members, in a way, right? So what I initially thought back then was going to be like a 3 days camp, stretched out to be 3 months, because I tried to reach out for aid from the various organizations or the helping organizations in Singapore, but did not happen. And it was only then in December 2009 when I got to meet. It's a chance encounter that Ravi was distributing biscuits to the other families by the beach. What are the odds, right? Oh. Somebody coming to the park and just distributing biscuits.
Yeah.
And because some of the other homeless family members over at Sembawang Beach knows about me. And Ravi, I think, was asking them if they know of any other families who would like to speak with him, and that was how we got connected. And I was reluctant to share my story back then, because strangers, right, who want to share your flight and whatever it is. And being like a typical Singaporean, you have this the tendency to be much more self-reliant than, you know, being dependent on others. So I was reluctant to share my story with him at first, but eventually after him like sharing with me that, you know, your situation, I'm looking at you right now, please let me know how I can help. And that was when I shared. And what touched me and what I just got to know when I wrote the book Homeless, right, is that Ravi wrote a 3-page letter to my MP that very same night that he met me. And the very next day, almost instantaneously after his letter, that I received help. So the interesting thing is that I tried to find help 3 months to no avail, unsuccessful, but with a stranger hearing out my plight and writing a 3-page letter, it is almost instantaneously get help for me the next day. So that was what happened, and that was my history. And
that's such an amazing story, though. It's such a lovely story.
Thank you, but
my goodness.
I've honestly, it's just something that I was thrown into. Nobody wants to be homeless, right? It was not pre-planned, or it was not something that, oh, we openly decided to do, to just camp by the beach for months. But it just happened to me and my two young sons back then. And at the same time, at a particular moment, I was also pregnant. So that kind of like put in more emotional toll and all that during that particular moment itself. But long story short, after I got out of homelessness, I tried to find work. You know, getting back to the workforce is not easy, especially when you are going through the throes of a single mother, having 3 young mouths to feed, putting food on the table, having to juggle between putting food on the table, finding the income, and also childcare. So it's really, really challenging for single mothers, right? And after that, soon after that, I decided that, hey, this is not working out. I tried to start up business. I dive myself in multi businesses, like so many businesses, and I learned so much from it. So right now, at the present moment, I'm still running Virtual Assistant Singapore, an administrative company that get tasks outsourced to them by other companies and MNCs globally. So that is what has kept me going all this while. And if it leads down to politics, that's an interesting story in itself. I know, right? Okay, so just to fill you in with what happened was, after the book was launched, so after I wrote my memoir, that's my debut, and after it was launched, I was contacted by a PAPMP. I kind of like, interesting. Why is it that suddenly people are, you know, like interested in me or in my story? And when we scheduled a dinner sometime late in 2019, I was given an opportunity to, you know, help more people in the masses. And I come from the space of serving others. I come from the space of, I am here to serve others and help others, right? So that kind of proposal sounds compelling to me. It's interesting to me. And it actually kind of like makes me open up my eyes to, okay, whatever befriending work that I've done now or what I'm doing now, helping the other families who are in need, I can do more if, let's say, I attribute to a higher level, right, in a way. And to touch base from where the root of the cause of the issue in itself, that is another interesting factor that plays in my head. So as I was contemplating that offer from that particular a PAPMP, right, after months on the road, after I gave birth to my 4th child, and nothing happens. So it's kind of like more of all talks and then no concrete actions. And it kind of made me question again if what I have thought or what my perception is of the ruling party is indeed what it is being shown to me right now. As in, you talk and then nothing happens, you know, something like that. So because of that, I kind of like withdrew myself back from being much more compelled into joining and helping in that instance. But then something magical happened in which in May, May this year, mm-hmm. Ravi came to me and mentioned to me about him setting up RDU, and then I got connected from Ravi to Michelle, getting to know how they work very fast, falling in love with the values of RDU, which is nicely in acronym, it spells FAITH. F-A-I-T-H.
Okay, yes.
So in acronym, it spells FAITH. But in a long haul, the values are fairness, accountability, integrity, transparency, mm-hmm. happiness, hope, and heart for the H.
Nice.
So falling in love with that values, right, that is what makes me much more compelled to join RDU,
yeah.
To step up to politics. And I said yes, because things go so fast, and I'm an entrepreneur, so I make decisions quick.
Yeah.
Based on, of course, I do my own research as well. And I take a few days to mull over in making the decision to join RDU and saying yes to Ravi when he asked me if I would consider being a candidate from RDU. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's the long story short.
For someone who has experienced and had first-hand experience with the challenges of being a single mother in Singapore, like what do you think are the gaps that needs to be filled to help single mothers in Singapore right now?
There are plenty. There are a lot. Okay, housing issues are one. Employment issues are another. Flexible working environment is still not a norm here in Singapore. Yes, COVID is here. However, there are still in our traditional industrial sectors of the businesses here in Singapore have yet to adopt the flexible working arrangement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are times like these, especially during this pandemic and post-pandemic itself, that we can reflect and see what could be done better and areas where, you know, if there is a possibility for the single mothers to have this flexible working arrangement for their side, then why are the employers not issuing it to them, right? So those are that kind of same issues. And at the same time, the current government take on creating temporary jobs is not really securing the future of Singapore, because what we have researched and what we can foresee is that it can cause more on a hike in the unemployment rate rather than helping Singaporeans to get securing a long-term job, security, and securing their own future and finding the food on the table. So, yeah, that is that. Other than that, childcare is another issue for single mothers, because we are doing everything on our own. We are looking for an income. At the same time, we need to juggle children's care. And childcare, as much as it has been made affordable, it has still a long way to go. So that are a couple of the issues that I could say as a single mother face.
So also touching on your experience being homeless in Singapore, what is it like? What do you think can be done in terms on a policy level to help address the issue of homelessness in Singapore? Because we've seen the survey saying that, you know, there's around 1,000, and that's only the ones that they were able to count. We're not sure if there's going to be more. So would you like to share your thoughts on that?
All right. The various policies that runs around an individual being homeless is a few myriad of it, because there are a lot of policies that involve for someone to, you know, at the end, not having a roof over his head, his or her head. So the policies that we will need to look into, like, you know, currently the public housing scheme, like the HDB, or the public housing rental scheme, like why are these people, even there's a high subsidy in the government houses that you can provide for all of these Singaporeans, and it's not reaching out to them. Why is it? And even if so that they have it, why are they still out there? There must be other issues, right? And also, what another policy that we will need to revise is the welfare policies. I'm concerned, especially being myself and befriending other families or other individuals in need, that the need to prove that they need this aid, the need to prove that, you know, that they are in these dire circumstances and henceforth they need this, that equals that they should have this aid. That need to prove shouldn't exist in the first place. Mm. And it requires a lot of revision in terms of the application for even just the welfare system on itself and a relook into that matter. So yeah, those are the kind of policies that surrounds especially people who are still homeless. And if we could, we would like, I myself personally would like to encourage more academics to put in a study of how many are the actual homeless people here in Singapore, because getting the numbers or the count from CBD areas or those who are at the void decks are just a fraction of it. Mm. Homelessness in Singapore encompasses different sectors, different areas, different portion.
Even the studies that we're doing on homelessness in Singapore, you say it's not comprehensive enough. It doesn't cover, give the full
not
picture.
Comprehensive. Definitely, it's not. Okay. That's still, yes.
Going back to, I just want to know a bit more about life. Sorry, that's my cat. Life being homeless in Singapore. Is there any challenges that someone without homes experience during an election period? Like, maybe am I allowed to vote if I don't have a registered address? Am I being excluded from political conversations because I am not home? I don't have this infrastructure, like maybe a phone or something like that. Is there anything you can share?
That is an interesting question. Because the thing about how our system work and how our voting system work is, as in the polling card will be delivered to our address that is stated on our NRIC, right? Mm. And a lot of the homeless families, like, for example, and some of the families that I know who I have helped, they have a residential address where they will take in the mailers from. But it doesn't mean that they are staying in that constituency, you see?
Yeah, exactly. So,
right? Yeah. So they can be like, okay, let me just fill you up more on that. They could be living somewhere in Tampines, for example, staying over in another friend or family's house, but their residential address that they have on their IC is a house in Jurong, for example. And Jurong has, that was like a family place that they agree to share their their address to this particular person so that they can still receive letters, and they are voting for Jurong constituency when they are staying in Tampines. Can you see the difference? So that could be one of the issue. Secondly, they might not receive the polling card at all, because they do not have the access to the mailing address that they have stated on their NRIC. That's another issue. I don't know. So it could be, for a homeless person to be part of the voting exercise is pretty challenging on their self. Moreover, and on top of their day to day, because they are already, they're already dampened by what they have to go through day to day, and not having a roof over their heads, not having the secure, safe environment that they can stay in, not having their privacy even. And on top of that, to make the decision to vote, don't you think it will be a tad hard on them?
Yeah.
This is interesting because when I got out of homelessness myself and I was transitioning from shelter to shelter, I remember that the constituency that I was placed in, where the shelters are at, will normally had walkover back then. Okay. So that constituency will usually suffers walkover. So I was in Tanjung Pagar, GRC before. Mm. And I didn't manage to vote for, I think, two times, like 2011, 2015, until I can only exercise my vote like now, I guess. Yeah, if I'm not wrong.
And yep. You're contesting.
Yes. Yes, and now I'm contesting. But I'm still casting votes though in my own constituency. So yeah, I'm still voting as well.
Okay, that's interesting. And also, we published an article just looking at what are the issues that Singapore youths care about, and one of it is race related issues. And I realized that Red Dot United's manifesto actually ticked quite a lot of boxes that youths are concerned with, and one of it is calling for a review of the national education framework to improve education on race and religion. Can you share with me a bit more on the motivation behind that? What are the issues that you think that can address?
The motivations behind that especially comes from, of course, our like a collective personal experiences from the minority, you know, the minority members here in RDU. That is one. Secondly, is also stems from Michelle's Michelle, our chairman for mm-hmm. RDU, her experience with working in the government school sector. So mm. she has an in-depth look into, an in-depth and a backdoor look into, you know, what is happening in the government school itself. And that mm-hmm. is why, hence, we are pushing out that policy. Mm-hmm. But on a personal level, if I were to speak about me, myself, I would say that there are many opportunities that us as a minority or, you know, as a Malay myself, right, miss out just because I am of this race. Mm-hmm. And that is in itself a discrimination, because why is it that there is inequality and unfairness on this scheme on a whole, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. yeah, that is. I hope that explains the motivation mm-hmm. in pushing out that particular mm-hmm, manifesto, mm-hmm, that particular point in our manifesto.
Yeah, as a MP for any GRC, right? Like the role is very, it's two pronged. You have to be able to speak up in parliament, and then at the same time, you have to manage town councils. What are your thoughts about these roles? How prepared are you to face these expectations?
I would say one preparation comes from the depth of my life experiences that prepares me and propels me to be where I am today. And hence that should, and I hope that it made me come across as much more prepared right now to be in parliament, right? Mm. Because from what I have experienced, it spurs me into being someone who is brave enough to step up and call out when there's a need to, mm-hmm. To voice out for those who are voiceless, to be the voice for them who are not being heard right now. Mm-hmm. So that is what I am championing, advocating. Mm-hmm. Because for me, why I am running for parliament, why I'm running for a seat right now is to be the voice for the people. Mm-hmm. And people is where I am going into parliament for. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That is one. Secondly, I hope that addressed the voicing out in parliament, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Secondly, to run a town council, if not only me, Ravi and Michelle have extensive experiences. Ravi in himself have extensive experiences because he has been involved in the social service sector for a whole, I don't know how many decades already, honestly. He's much more attuned to that. And because of that, collectively, we have, as a team, we have the experience to go into saying that, yes, we are capable in running a town council. And me, myself, I have experience in running businesses, right?
So, yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. We have one question from one of the viewers. Someone just wants to know, how did your family react to your decision to enter politics?
That's a good question, because I have two sides of reaction. One is, are you sure, Liana? Can you be more careful? Yeah, so that kind of reaction, that is one. And secondly, it's like, I'm so proud of you. I'm really, really proud of you. So these are the two kind of reactions that I received. So the first reaction will be more of the senior members in my family, because, yeah, and I don't blame them, you know. Our senior members in our family tends to be much more cautious in a way. And it is somehow drilled in them that you have to bow down and just follow what has been taught to you, and do not question, do not try to, you know, ask more than what you know, or something mm-hmm. like that. And because of that, it makes them easy to get swayed in certain areas, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one side. And secondly, where I got the support, I'm mainly coming from the younger side of my family members. So my children, they look up to me. I had a conversation with my eldest son quite recently, I think 2 nights ago, and I asked him, how do you feel that mama is doing this? How do you feel that you see me on news right now? Then he say, I'm so proud of you, mama. I'm really proud. That's so awesome. Hearing that from your teenage son, right, it's like, oh, that makes my day already. And that gives me the fire to keep on running.
Awesome. Yeah. I think it's really great, because like in terms of diversity, like we're seeing so many like a very diverse group of new people entering politics this general election. And it's really inspiring even for me to look and to see you as well, someone with such highs and lows, someone has gone through so much highs and lows and now trying to serve the people. Awesome. That's great. I think we can wrap up the interview. Do you have any last words?
Oh, my last word will be for, especially to the Jurong residents, please do vote. Share about Red Dot United. We are here for you. So I hope on the 10th of July, you can give us your best support and your votes. And of course, to all the other Singapore citizens, don't forget on the 10th of July, vote wisely.
The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Byron Perry, Vim Shanmugam, and Summer Lee. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez. Our editor is Rainer Lim.